Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Iowa Republican Joni Ernst, who joins us to discuss biofuels policy and the upcoming farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. USDA is releasing $850 million through the Inflation Reduction Act to boost oversubscribed conservation programs. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the funding will help more producers utilize conservation programs such as the Environmental Quality Incentives Program and the Conservation Stewardship Program. Provisions in the IRA require the new funding to be targeted toward practices that can build soil carbon and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The U.S.-Mexico GMO corn dispute took new steps this week. Mexico's president issued a new modified decree specifically banning genetically modified white corn for food products. Imports of yellow corn for livestock feed would still be permitted. The U.S. Trade Representative also received a response to its request for scientific justification of the original ban issued in 2020. That response and USTR's evaluation are key steps in a process that could lead to a possible dispute settlement process. And finally, it was a busy week for farm bill politics. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy attended a farm bill listening session in California and said he's confident that a farm bill will get passed this year. He did not provide an exact timetable, but portions of the 2018 farm bill expire September 30th. Meanwhile, the Congressional Budget Office on Wednesday raised its cost estimate for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits by more than 8% over the next 10 years. Iowa Republican Joni Ernst is a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee. She says the CBO score is one of many things that will ultimately shape the farm bill budget.
We got the CBO score, and it's coming in, of course, higher than we would have hoped at $1.5 trillion for the entire bill. But surprisingly, to many people across the United States, probably is the amount that SNAP takes in the farm bill, and that's about $1.2 trillion. So when you're looking at the overall bill, I hope that people do understand that the vast majority of the bill will be food support programs. A smaller, much, much smaller portion of the bill is actually dedicated to the various, what we would consider farm titles or agricultural related titles within the bill.
Well, and let's talk about those farm programs. We're already seeing a number of the nation's farm groups say that maybe the current reference price structure is not as supportive as it should be. Some other areas where they might be looking for increased support. But are you all going to be able to do that on Capitol Hill, given the fact that we're seeing this increase in SNAP spending as a result of the Thrifty Food Plan? Are you all going to have the flexibility you need to offer the increased support to producers?
I would love to say that we are going to have that flexibility, but this will require some very hard conversations with people from all corners of the United States and all across ag land as well. You mentioned the reference prices, and we don't know that they are accurately reflecting what our farmers are throwing out there for their inputs. So we know that this is going to be difficult. We're going to have some wrangling to do. I hope that we can get this done in this farm bill, but we are a long ways away from that finish line.
Mm-hmm. As we look at this farm bill, just a quick question here before I want to talk about some other topics, but anything in particular we should be watching for in terms of Senator Ernst in particular farm bill priorities?
Well, there are a lot of farm bill priorities, but one that I am hearing more and more about from our Iowans and, of course, everybody across the Midwest is the concern about China. China is always on our mind now, especially after the Chinese spy balloon came across the Midwest. But what I hear is mainly about foreign investment in ag land. And in Iowa, we are very fortunate to have laws on the books already regarding this. But what we don't want to see is that we have adversaries or foreign entities coming in and purchasing valuable, productive ag land, or also buying land around sensitive military areas. So this is a priority. I'll be working on this with the members of the Agricultural Committee, as well as with USDA.
We'll be right back with more from Senator Ernst right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Iowa Republican Joni Ernst says she's one of many who are wondering if the U.S. is doing enough in the GMO corn dispute with Mexico.
We really need the pressure on Mexico. And certainly Mexico and Canada, they both signed on to the USMCA with us, and they need to abide by that. And what we see is President AMLO really giving us the pushback on our GMO corn. And they are our number one purchaser of Iowa corn. And so we need to make sure that they're adhering to the agreements. And if they are not, then we need to step up and go through the steps to make sure that they are adhering to it. So I'd love to see Secretary Vilsack and our trade rep, Catherine Tai, really push the Mexicans on this. It's very, very important for our economy, most certainly in Iowa, but all across the Midwest.
So the Biden administration has already said through Secretary Vilsack that trade retaliatory action would be on the table, a dispute settlement process, rather. They've gone down to Mexico and said this, what you're proposing is not acceptable and it's not within the bounds of the agreement. You say you'd like increased pressure on the Mexicans. In your opinion, what does that increased pressure look like?
Well, that increased pressure is starting the process, actually, to those retaliatory actions. And certainly President Biden needs to have a call with President AMLO and state, listen, we want to be good neighbors, we want to be good partners, but you need to adhere to the end of your bargain. We are doing that. You should as well.
Mm-hmm. Want to wrap up our conversation talking about E15. I know that's been a big legislative priority for you and several of your fellow Midwest lawmakers. Saw you were on a letter, led a letter actually with about 31 of them last week. But there's also been legislation moving, that letter calling for immediate action on the governor's petition to allow summer E15 sales. But we saw legislation introduced that you co-sponsored last year with the support of the American Petroleum Institute to make this happen legislatively and offer a nationwide fix as opposed to the regional fix that the governor's petition might offer. Do you expect that legislation could potentially move in lieu or perhaps in support of the governor's petition?
Well, we certainly are going to approach it from every possible angle. Leave no stone unturned in this case. So yes, we are pushing the administration to allow E15 year-round permanently rather than relying upon emergency waivers every single year. We shouldn't be doing that. We need some certainty out there for our corn growers as well as those ethanol producers. We would hope to see legislation move, but we know that this administration is very focused on electric vehicles. Well, we have a ready-made solution right now, and we know the internal combustion engine is going to be around for a very long time. So let's partner together. Let's work with the petroleum folks to make sure that we get E15 out there. We get it year-round. And we are also, by doing that, providing for a cleaner environment. We have a product right now. Let's use it.
Mm-hmm. Also, this week saw some of your former colleagues on the Environment and Public Works Committee, a committee you used to serve on, held a hearing this week on possible federal legislation in regards to, I believe, clean fuels was the title that they used in the title of the hearing. But a nationwide LCFS, a low carbon fuel standard, seems like there's a lot of interest potentially on what federal biofuel policy tweaks could look like now that we're kind of post renewable fuel standard congressional mandate levels. What do you assess as kind of the temperature for a potential federal legislative vehicle on Capitol Hill on this subject?
Well, I do think that there is potential, but again, we have an administration that is so anti-internal combustion engine. But the great thing is that as we have this pressure from the administration for EVs, we're finding all sorts of partners in, like I said, in the petroleum industry as well. So it's really good that we have this movement out there, that people are listening. So we'll continue to push for it wherever we can.
Well, certainly biofuels policy, a thing to watch this year as we wait the EPA's decision on that governor's petition. But I think that's all the time we have for now. Senator Ernst, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks so much, Spencer. Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel takes a look at the latest consumer price index in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Consumers have been hit hard by rising grocery prices over the last year. But new figures show the punch may be softening its blow. The latest consumer price index shows the lowest monthly increase since December 2021. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported the overall consumer price index ticked up 0.5% last month, driven by increases in energy cost. As for the grocery bill, that's up more than 11% over the last year. But as you can see on this chart, month-over-month increases are getting smaller. The changes are different across food categories. Egg prices, for instance, are 70% higher than a year ago and shot up 8.5% in January. But fruits and vegetables got cheaper last month, and dairy product prices held steady. That all helped to offset some increases in other items like cereals, beef, and bakery products. Philip Brasher has more details on food prices and his coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to influence legislation and investment decisions as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. We're going to convene a panel discussion now discussing a number of things facing the biofuels industry and corn producers across the country, and excited to be joined this week by a number of panelists to help us do that. Joined by Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol, Kathy Bergen with the National Corn Growers Association, and Kurt Kovarik with Clean Fuels Alliance America. Appreciate all of you taking the time to join us. And Kathy, I want to go to you first, and we're going to frame our discussion around biofuels. But before we get to that, a key producer of biofuels feedstock, obviously the nation's corn growers, and they're watching with great interest south of the border as the U.S. and Mexico are involved in a current trade debate over the future of GMO corn imports in Mexico. I guess before we get to biofuels, from NCGA's standpoint, is this a situation that has moved past time for talks and it's time for a formal dispute settlement process, or does NCGA still think there is room to negotiate?
Sure. Thanks, Spencer. And no, there's definitely been a lot of movement and continued discussion on this issue. Corn growers certainly appreciate the advocacy of the Biden administration, Secretary Vilsack, Trade Representative Tai. But yes, I think kind of given the ongoing nature of this issue, I think we do feel and have been encouraging the administration to initiate the formal dispute settlement under the terms of USMCA. I think we believe that. That's the pathway to resolve this issue and provide that certainty for, not only for corn growers, but for all users of these technologies that are well approved and found to be safe, and really just to uphold the terms of the USMCA that our friends and neighbors, Mexico and Canada, have agreed to with the United States.
Mm-hmm. So then shifting the conversation over to biofuels and bringing Brian, bringing you into the fold here now, we've seen an action in the last week, a number of lawmakers petitioning the Environmental Protection Agency and the Biden administration more broadly to be a little bit more forceful in their work and their speed with that EPA governor's petition that would allow them to sell E15 within their own states. But that's a number of Midwestern states. It's where the bulk of the E15 sales take place. But in the event that that petition, let's say, does in fact get approved, is there a path that the biofuels industry is looking toward right now for that broader national market for E15?
Well, I would say, Spencer, all options are on the table, right? We don't have the luxury of sort of picking which path we may pursue to get E15 year round. Obviously, last year, emergency waivers were issued by President Biden in response to supply shortages and, of course, record high prices at the pump. E15 was saving consumers as much as 30 to 80 cents a gallon on average, depending on what part of the country you lived in. And so certainly emergency waivers would be on the agenda. We're strongly advocating in favor of what the Midwest governors have pursued. And there will also be legislative opportunities, though I would say the window is very short between now and the June 1st summer driving season to get any real traction on legislation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Kurt, obviously the folks at Clean Fuels Alliance America keep a very close eye on things as they relate to the biodiesel and renewable diesel side of the biofuel space. And we know that Clean Fuels was very frustrated with the renewable volume obligations that were released last year, the volume targets set over the next couple of years for the biodiesel industry. And I do wonder, with so much regulatory conversation relating to the governor's position on E15, overall comments on this RVO, do you think EPA and OMB officials will have the latitude, will have the ability to, you know, fully understand your frustrations and potentially be able to make fixes?
Yeah, I think so. The RVO is a separate process from what's going on with respect to year-round E15. So it's kind of a different group of issues and a different group of stakeholders. And I think kind of the feedback that we've heard with respect to the RVO proposal that came out in December, comments were due last week. We're presenting the data, we're presenting the job loss, the economic loss, and other failures of the proposal when setting a stagnant volume. EPA has a great opportunity here over the next 3 years to build on the proposal that they put forward in June of 2022. But so far, the proposal is a no-growth scenario for biomass-based diesel, which just isn't connected to reality in terms of what is happening in our industry.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee convened this week to explore possible changes to the nation's biofuel policy. But Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol says he hopes any potential tweaks would be a supplement to the existing renewable fuel standard.
Well, make no mistake, we still think the renewable fuel standard can be a tremendously positive tool for driving renewable fuel use, specifically for higher blends of ethanol, if it's implemented properly. But that's not always been the case. And so we are also strongly advocating to stand up these new clean fuel marketplaces, whether that is in Midwest states, and we're working very aggressively in places like Minnesota right now, or at the federal level. We do believe that more needs to be done to decarbonize transportation fuel greenhouse gas emissions. We know that ethanol is part of the solution. Our advocacy is really going to center on making sure farmers can play a role, making sure climate smart agriculture practices can be counted as part of the greenhouse gas reductions from biofuels under any low carbon fuel standard, whether that's at the federal or state level.
Well, you mentioned the push for decarbonizing the nation's vehicle fleet. And for a lot of folks, decarbonization means electrification. And I know that's maybe not an opinion wholeheartedly endorsed by some of the folks and some of the organizations on this panel. But a lot of folks pushing toward electrification, a lot of folks within the government pushing toward electrification. And Kathy, what do you kind of assess as the general environment for potential legislative action in the biofuels sector right now?
No, I think we're not, are kidding ourselves and saying this is going to be easy. But I think Brian made a good point. We need to build on the success of the RFS with the continued push to decarbonize transportation. Renewable fuels, biodiesel, ethanol, renewable diesel are low carbon fuels. There is a huge opportunity to increase the role of these fuels, to remove barriers to higher blends, to have more efficient vehicles to use these fuels on the road. And all of those steps would have an immediate impact on reducing those emissions. So I think in terms of having that immediate impact, there's a much larger role that biofuels can play, both in vehicles that are on the road today and that are going to be on the road for a long time to come, but also in terms of future vehicles.
Well, Kurt, we've seen that the biodiesel industry has been a major beneficiary of the LCFS in California. Wondering then, what would sort of a national policy look like, and what would that mean for the biodiesel and other industries under the clean fuels umbrella?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, biomass-based diesel has been the success story of the California low carbon fuel standard. 33% of the diesel pool in California today is a renewable content because of renewable diesel and biomass-based diesel. 45% of the credits generated on their system are generated by biomass-based diesel. I would say this, I'm not necessarily going to predict the timeline for a national low carbon fuel policy. What I would say is, so long as a policy is crafted to not discriminate against agriculture, crop-based biofuels, we recognize everyone thinks that the solution is electric vehicles. The fact of the matter is, if the policies are put in place that don't discriminate, biofuels do extremely well. And why is that? Well, because we're the readily accessible, lowest cost, easily achievable low carbon solution.
So certainly noteworthy to mention the fact that the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate took up this issue as one of its headline issues, very high on their agenda very early in the Congress, that panel considered this idea. Certainly a number of things to watch on that, the E15 petition and a number of other things within the biofuel sector. We appreciate all of you stopping by to offer your thoughts. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, our Lydia Johnson explores global biofuel demand in this week's Map It Out.
Domestic corn demand for ethanol production has plateaued over the last decade, and two new models project what the future could look like for global demand. A USDA report provides a glimpse into two distinct potentials for ethanol exports. This map models a historical blend scenario, which assumes countries continue to blend ethanol at established rates. Economists estimate this situation would increase ethanol fuel consumption by 5.7% between 2018 and 2030, with demand driven primarily by India, Brazil, and China. The second map, showing the targeted blend scenario, assumes countries reach currently unmet goals or mandates. International consumption would see a 180% increase in the same years, with the greatest demand coming from Canada, China, and Brazil. Many factors contribute to the varying estimates, including the adoption of hybrid or electric vehicles, fuel efficiency, and ethanol blend rates. Currently, 4 out of every 10 bushels of corn go toward ethanol production, so any changes in the global marketplace, whether big or small, will have a large impact on American producers. Noah Wicks takes a deeper dive into the story on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to influence legislation and investment decisions as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA will convene its annual Ag Outlook Forum Thursday and Friday in Arlington, Virginia. We'll be keeping a close eye on the farm economy projections the department will release throughout the event. And our Noah Wicks will be at the Family Farm Alliance Annual Conference in Reno, Nevada. Stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for all of this and more. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.